Yeah, how far are you willing to conceptualize? How far are you willing to go? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, it's coming up. Yeah. So I'm going to give you another tip here is, over the years, people ask you, are you a Christian? And then I immediately think this is the most amazing question, and I jump in with both feet to tell them, yes, I am, and this is what it means. Right? Because that's your role too. Somebody gives you a question, are you a Christian? But somebody taught me some time ago that don't ever answer that with yes. Answer it with a question. Do you remember how often Jesus actually threw a question back? Say, could you explain what you mean by Christian? What do you think a Christian is? Yeah. And people are very, very kind, and they explain it to you. And you know, in today's world as well, you hate gays, and you know, all this stuff comes out. And I goes, well, with that definition, I am not a Christian. And then bite your tongue, say nothing. Because if the awkward silence is long enough, they will ask, so what do you do? And now it's okay. It's much better. And I always start, well, first of all, I do not hate gays. God does not give me a permission to hate anyone. I want to see everyone come to the kingdom. So anyway, so it gives you onto a much more better platform. So please use this, because this is probably one of the greatest tools that I use continually. And it's funny how you still... It's, are you a Christian? And it seems like a positive thing, and you're so excited, dude. And you know, and what was I supposed to say here? Oh yeah. What do you mean by that? What's a Christian to you? All right. Please, Jesus, protect me from your followers. I've got nothing against God. It's his fan club I can't stand. This is the prevalent feeling of a lot of the people that you live and work and reside along, right? We have some work to do. You need to talk to Zach a lot. He experiences a lot because he's doing cool things. So let me tell you a story. Anybody, do not say the name of this company, but everybody knows this company. So I am standing in a long lineup with my groceries, and in front of me is a really handsome, very old gentleman. I'm actually looking at him thinking, now that is one good-looking old man. And he was probably 85. But, you know, his clothes were right, his hair was clean, and, you know, he just looked like, wow. Yeah, exactly. So he has very few things in front of him. Very practical things. A box of rice, you know, the basics. And then the lineup is really long, and he starts putting his coins on the belt. And the cashier sweetheart leans over and starts counting his cash, and he's looking for more, and says, sorry, sir, you don't have enough. And the man looks, what do I do now? And then she comes up with the solution. If I remove this box of rice, then you can afford all the rest. And the old man says, oh, thank you. That's very kind of you. And she puts it behind her, and then this moment comes to me. Here I am. You know, because you know the story, but what do you do here?
With
what?
With your own money.
Guess what? I got no money. I got a credit card. Okay, so work with me here.
Put it in your own groceries.
Exactly. But at this time, what's the delay over there in the back of the lineup? People are not very happy when their Walmart lineups. So I said, sir, if you could wait for me, we can just put those in with my groceries. I got you covered. And he looks at me and he goes, oh no, you don't have to do that. And I said, I know I don't. I want to do that. Can you wait? He goes, yes, I can. The cashier has tears in her eyes. And I'm like, oh wow, this is a God moment. Finally, I wake up. Because I'm just concerned about the people who are grumbling behind me. Wow, this is so cool. And I hear the lady behind, somebody behind me says, that guy is paying for the old man's groceries that he can't afford. And all of a sudden, everything changed in this lineup. People are smiling because of this one particular event. So we do that, and the old man is waiting for me when I come out. He goes, "Why did you do that?" I goes, "Because if tables were turned, you would probably do the same thing to me. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And he goes, "Yes." And he walked away. But nobody came to Christ here. Nobody said, "I want to come to your church." No, there was no opportunity to say, "I'm doing this for Jesus," which would have been a really tempting thing to say, because Jesus is in me, therefore, no. Yes, Jesus is in me, but it was also the right thing to do, right? But the spiritual atmosphere in the lineup went from aggressive to, wow, silence. And as I'm walking, that was not needed, but that was how they felt. So you took that moment and turned it into something that glorified God. So I walked out with the man, and I did bless him. I said, "May the Lord bless you, and may this never happen to you again, that you cannot afford to buy the basics." And that was it. So, there's a little hint there. You know, people have name tags, right? I want you from this day forward, wherever you are and you see somebody with a name tag, use their name. We like to be called by name. Do you know how much the Bible spends on listing names? Wow! Not one of the most exciting parts of the Bible, but there's a lot of names. Use people's names and watch what happens. Even if it's just a cashier, and how is your day going today, Janine? And it's immediate. They realize that someone's speaking to me. And if that's all you do, says, "I want to bless you. You're doing a great job." And often I say, "At the end of your day, do you remember any faces?" No. It's all a big blur. Everybody always says that. "I don't remember a single face." But then they say, "But I'm going to remember yours, because I stopped long enough." Now, the trick here is, don't start a conversation that's going to make 15 other people angry at your attempt at sharing your faith. You have to be careful, you know, that you don't cause, that your witness does not become somebody's angry reason to be angry. So, logical urgency. I like this term. We should have an urgency to share our faith, but it should be tempered with logic. Because when we don't use logic and we go by feelings, then we usually end up pushing people further away or making them angry at us. So remember that. Have a logical urgency. You need a simple story that you can pull up like that. And also, you need to figure out some questions, how to answer them. So this is from my daily walk. Well, my daily walk that I should do every day. I do it most days, but not daily. This is on the front steps and goes down to the ocean. This is really near my home. And I was so excited one day when they had painted this cement wall that is in the parking lot, because it was looking really shabby. And so I was, "Oh, wonderful, this looks so much better now." So a few days later, I'm coming up, and this is what it said. Now, how many people do you think out of the 1,000 that go by there every day, "Oh, wow, I got to check into Jesus"?
It's called evangelism.
Oh, I like that. Thank you. Thank you.
Perfect for evangelism, right? I love it. Do not practice evangelism.
Like, what was this person saying? The city had paid a lot of money to bring in a painting crew. And not a single person, I am pretty sure, was impacted to follow Jesus because of this. And also, this is illegal. You could be fined for this. But I'm a Christian. I want to share my faith. I have a black magic marker that does not wash off. You have no idea how angry this made me, and I believed Jesus was doing something like this. This is okay. This is easy to laugh at, but what are we doing?
something that may be laughable as well. You can't force someone to comprehend a message they're not ready to receive. Zach must face this a lot. Still, you must never underestimate the power of seeds, of planting seeds. Just that little thing, just bless you. God bless you. You are important. Do you know that God appreciates someone who works like you do? Just those simple words. First of all, you're also giving them a positive image about their work. You're also making them feel good on a physical, just on an emotional level, but you're bringing God into the formula. Why is your story important? People can argue against your faith. They can argue about all kinds of things, but your story is yours. This is my story. Well, I don't believe it. Well, that's fine. That's your option, but this is my story. So when you tell a story about how God has done something for you or how he has changed you, oh, I have to inject here. One of my favorite things that I'm using lately. Why do you follow Jesus? Why are you a Christian? One of my favorite things to say to that is, because being his follower has made me into a better man. Isn't that beautiful? I actually took that from a movie. Yeah. You make me want to be a better man. What movie? You make me want to be a better man. Jack Nicholson. Absolutely. Good. But I thought, because being his follower has made me into a better man. Wow. Well, I'm kinder. I'm gentler. I'm a better husband. I'm definitely a better father. And I just list these things. And I care about the people around me. And no, who's going to argue against this? Anyway, so that's my story and I'm sticking to it. So you're talking about a relationship, not theology or theory. Why don't we share our faith? We are busy and we lack compassion and we're complacent. It's too easy not to. I like to think that I live this life all the time, but there are so many times when I fail. I just don't want to do this. There are actually prayers that I've said on an airplane after a course somewhere halfway around the world. Lord, please don't put anyone beside me because I'm so tired. That's being complacent. I'm just being tired, but I don't want to talk to anyone. And then, of course, God says, I know you're tired, but watch what I'm going to do now. Political correctness. Canadian, one of our biggest, could we call it a sin? I don't know what it is, but it's like, ooh, don't rock the boat. The worldly culture influences us. It's amazing how many believers today think all religions have merit. We're all, you know, everybody's going to be okay. So we are no longer believing in the exclusiveness of Jesus. No, they don't. Feel unqualified. I just should say something, but I don't know what to say, so I won't. Lack of training or knowledge, that's why you're here. And simply fear. Oh my goodness, I've asked God for a divine appointment. Lord, I'm sitting here on a park bench. I'm waiting for somebody. It's going to be another 45 minutes. Lord, put somebody beside me that you have preordained for me to meet. And let me share about how wonderful you are. And pluck, somebody sits down beside me. My first go-to reaction, I'm going to get killed. Like, I'm deathly afraid to open my mouth. I just asked for this guy to come and sip this, but here he is. And then I take a deep breath and I say, wow. You know what I was doing just before you sat down? I was praying to God, put somebody beside me so that I can share what he means to me, what God means to me. Are you that person? Did God send you? And people are like, whoa. I've had people literally get up and walk away. But most of the time people say, wow, what a concept. I go, I'm serious, you know. Are you interested? And most of the time it has worked out really well. Most of the time. I've never been hit yet. But the initial feeling is fear when you're about to step out of the boat. If you're not feeling the fear, good for you. But I still feel it. I'm not over it. I have a story. Do I have a story? I don't have a story. You have a story, but I don't. Anyone who believes in the Son of God has this testimony or story in his heart. The Bible says you have a story. You have a testimony. You can argue against that? There are people in your life today whose best chance at getting to know Jesus is you. One of the scariest statements I have ever conceived. Wow. God has entrusted certain individuals to be a part of my life. And because I'm a believer and they have no other believing friends, I remain the best chance. That puts a lot of pressure on sometimes. It shouldn't, but it should keep us alert. So, this is a paraphrased version of that Bible verse. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. Have you ever read this Bible passage? Have you ever picked it apart? I spent a lot of time because I didn't believe how I understood was true. So feel free to correct me. You are the one who's more intellectual and more theologically correct than I am, if I'm wrong, but this is what I think it says. So we have Jesus praying, right? My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. So here we have Jesus. We have a believer and a non-believer. Is this correct so far? Those are the three people in this Bible text. So who is for them? He's praying. Jesus says, I'm praying for you, the believer, who will believe you. He's also praying for the person who has not heard and who will believe in me because of whose message? Your message. Is this correct? Doesn't that blow you away? You're about to share your faith with somebody and you know Jesus is praying for you. For this person. So lately I've been saying, Jesus, I'm going to step out of the boat here. You better be praying for that person. I'm good. Pray, put all the prayers on that person because I want to have an easy time. But like this blows me away. Jesus, God, he has us both covered. It just should give you a little bit sense of lose your fear. So I'm praying not only for you, but also for those you share your faith with who will believe in me because of you and your witness about me. That's a paraphrased one. I love that. I'm so glad that it has been affirmed that I am not teaching a false theology here. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Thank you. Whew, what a relief. And we've all heard this one, but let's just look at it one more time. Everybody knows Peter's six-pointer on how to share your faith. So you know the Bible verse, so I'm just going to go to the points. Be prepared. When you are doing exams at school, university, you know the ones who do best in exams? The ones who can anticipate the questions. In my high school, my teachers were so dumb because they wanted everybody to pass so they wouldn't have to look at us again the second year, because I was at an all-boys school and it was not a nice place to be. So they would always give the answers to tests coming up if you listened carefully. Right. So therefore, that's the only reason I ever got through high school, because I knew which questions were coming up. But in your Christian walk, you need to be prepared for the questions that people have about your faith. When you finally get that opportunity to share your faith, how many chances do you think you'll actually get? There's only one first time. And it is your responsibility to be able to answer the questions to the best of your ability, hopefully by researching the answers. Answer, defend. Defend your position. Live a life that elicits questions, that people will come and ask you these questions. I love this one. Reason. Use your mind. A lady at the hospital, I was working the midnight shift. She was a real, true Pentecostal. Way better Pentecostal. Capital P Pentecostal. And she was always sharing her faith everywhere and leaving wrecks everywhere that I had to clean up. You know, are you like her? No. I had to apologize. No. You know, it was really hard to come after her.
because people would come, what is wrong with her? So it's midnight shift. You know, you're supposed to be really quiet in the hospital. She sees me down those endless corridors in hospitals, and she sticks her head out. I'm in. It's midnight in the hospital. I went to a Holy Spirit weekend, and the Lord slew me, and I fell to the ground. Wow. And she's from here to that kitchen back wall. And from rooms, nurses are sticking out. Who is she talking to? I'm like the target. Are you like that too?
No.
Don't do that. Reason. She was going on emotion. Maybe that would work somewhere, but first of all, she was breaking the rules of the workplace. Use reason. People don't want the flippant answers from Hallmark cards. They want well reasoned out reasons for why you believe. I like this one. Be gentle. Be nice. Unless you're dealing with a Muslim imam, then you can be as loud and bolsterous as you want because they like that. But usually, gentle and nice is a good rule. And be respectful of people. How do you respect people? Simply by allowing them to also talk to you. It's not one-way conversation. Who's heard of Pascal's wager? Rico? Pascal's wager? Blaise Pascal? Frenchman?
The first Pascal.
Blaise Pascal. Pascal.
I've heard of Pascal.
Yeah, you've heard of it, right? So it goes something like this. If God does not exist and I believe in him, I go to heaven. If God does not exist and I believe in him, nothing happens, right? If God exists and I don't believe it, I go to hell. That's pretty scary. If God doesn't exist and I don't believe, nothing happens. This is what you call a win-win situation. You cannot lose. But if you want to include, Blaise Pascal was one of the most brilliant minds. There's a book called Mind on Fire. I have read it and read it and read it. It is a wonderful book if you want to see the power of reasoning for your faith. I wrote the book Cross Cultures, and you're going to get a copy of it. You can just download it after the seminar. In there is a story about an NHL draft pick, a friend of mine who had lived a very, very immoral life in the hockey world. And he said, I can never become a Christian. And because I love sex too much. And, you know, he had all these fantastic reasons why he could never become a Christian. So he came with me to a service in Toronto. It was a youth rally because he liked Finns. He was a Finnish guy. And so he wanted to meet more Finns. So he came. And to my surprise, when they gave the altar call, he went up. And I'm like, on the drive up here, you're telling me how ridiculous this faith thing is and how you can't give up sex. And now you're all, are you faking it? That's, you know. So on the way home, driving home, I said, all right, buddy, explain it to me. You know, this one, explain it to me, Lucy. Well, I'm too old. You guys are too young for that one. Anybody know that one? So, yeah, okay. So he says, well, as I was listening to the sermon, it came to me that if Jesus is the real thing, then the most illogical thing for me to do is not to accept what he freely offers. And I can't take that chance. This man made a total turnaround. Today his family is saved and he is following the Lord and is a very happy believer. But he did not use emotions. He used reason. And I think part of the reason why he has made a consistent church-going, church-contributing, missions-contributing person is because he was never in an emotional moment in meeting. I'm not saying it's wrong to have emotions, but this worked for him. So in today's world, most people don't want to hear about your feelings. They want rational thinking. So please do some study on that. Then there's the culture question. Do we know why people reject the gospel? If you don't know, Google it.
My goodness, 800 reasons. But there is, if you Google this question, you will get the same five and same 10 fairly frequently. So now I'm going to ask you, number one reason, not necessarily in number order, why would people refuse to accept the gospel or to hear your testimony? What's their number one reason today? Incorrect Canada.
Incorrect Canada.
Incorrect,
yeah. Well, I think the exclusiveness of the
exactly.
message.
It's too exclusive.
Yeah.
Everybody else is for right. Good. Anything else? I'm not looking for a right answer. I'm just looking for a short list. I want to show you how incredibly easy this is. What's another reason why people refuse to accept God?
Bad Christians.
What?
Bad Christians.
Hypocrites.
Hypocrites. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That is actually the number one.
Yeah.
I have a really good response to that I use a lot. Just because some golf players are hypocrites does not mean the golf game is bad. Just because, and Christians do not have the market cornered on being hypocrites. There are hypocrites in every belief system, in every system. So this is not exclusively that some Christians, yes, unfortunately, are hypocrites.
But we should stop having government.
Exactly. But I am not. I work hard at not being a hypocrite. That does not mean that the message that is being offered to you is bad. Just because people are not able to follow the teachings of Jesus does not make Jesus bad. Something like that. So what cultural trends make it difficult for people to believe? Intellectually, there's no God. There cannot be a God. And miracles, oh, come on. That's, you just, you know, people refuse to believe these things that are so important to believers. This is a huge one today. God's purpose for sexuality. What do you mean I can't have sex with my neighbor's wife? I have rights. People are so, what's good for me is all that matters. So it's really hard for people to grasp that God has really strict sexual morals, and they in today's over you talked about it today in the sermon. The world is just being pushed and shoved through all the medias about sex, so therefore that is not going to happen. Experientially, have you ever met someone who said, I can't become a believer because my sins are too great? This is a mind blown, because I once went to school with a young lady who introduced me to Victoria. Yes, she's the reason I'm in Victoria today, and we're still good friends. And she told me, because I had shared my faith with her, and she said, I cannot become a believer. I've had an abortion. God will never forgive me. Wow. And nothing I could tell her would convince her that God can and will forgive. So it's really sad, you know. So how do we then get past these things? Well, that's up to you. However, so okay, now I want you to tell me, why are you a follower of Jesus? I am the guy at the bus stop. We're waiting for a bus 15 minutes from now. Why are you a follower of Jesus? Because you just told me why. Why are you following Jesus?
Because he changed my
Good answer.
Why are you following?
Himself, he appeared to me in a way that I realized that I needed.
These are great answers. And you can't argue with that, because these are coming from their experience. Anybody got anything else? Why are you following Jesus? I've already told you my reason, so.
To save me from myself.
Absolutely. Excellent.
It's the only worldview that makes sense for me.
Nice.
It makes sense. Origin, meaning, morality, and destiny.
Excellent.
That's a change in destiny from brokenness, misery, and deception. My family, generation, all calls into wholeness and
peace. Nice.
And it's a very particular, also, initial. And my mother was a big factor in it.
So the reason I brought that up is because when you get a chance to say, well, you're a follower of Jesus, please don't draw blank. Please don't go, because you do not get a second chance. So I want you to start thinking about it, writing it down, write down your testimony. I was hoping we could do it here, but this is a journey that you're starting on. I have many, many stories on my computer, depending on who the person is, because I realized quickly that my gay and lesbian friends need a different kind of story. My Muslim friends need another story. I mean, they all lead to Jesus. I mean, they all lead to the same thing. But I am continually, when I find some downtime, I pull up the file. How can I improve my testimony? There's the elevator one, you know, the one you have very short time, and then there's the one that where you have longer one. So I have two versions of each. And it begins from you defending why you've chosen to follow Jesus. And for me personally, right now at this time of my life, the one that I go to is because he has made me into a better man. And usually they ask, like, how? So then it's that, to me, that is the one that I use. What difference does it make to you? Like, what difference is it like that you're following Jesus? What does it do for you? What do you get out of it? People want to know. It's like selling something that, what is the benefit of buying this refrigerator over that one? You know, like, what is, for you, what is the benefit? What is, so this is a follow-up to that why. This is what for? Anybody?
Joy and peace of mind.
Nice. You know, in today's world, peace of mind commands a big price. Yeah, anything else?
Nothing without
him. Wow, nothing without him. Nice.
I'm never alone. Excellent. So, as you probably noticed, that I've incorporated not one and two into my one sentence. Why do I follow Jesus? Because he has made me into a better man. So it's you know. So anyway, so these are the basics that we need to address when we are given a chance to share our story. Number three, how has your life changed? How is he changing? Somebody actually did say, was it you? I don't know. It's you already answered this question.
Yeah, it's saving me from myself. So just show that there is a beginning, there's a rational reason for it, and also that something good is still happening. It wasn't something that happened in Sunday school and I'm good for the rest of my life. So you're trying to show this continuation of your walk with the Lord. Now, I have to warn you, this doesn't happen a whole lot to me, that I get this far. But the thing is that when you get that opportunity, if you have not practiced it, I guarantee you, you will come up with something that you regret all the way home. Oh man, I should have said that. Why didn't I do that? Because it comes so suddenly. There's no warning. People just out of nowhere, like, where did that come from? What about the person who mocks your faith and throws mocking questions at you? Well, how do you treat them? Good. It is my contention that even if they ask a ridiculing question, they deserve the best answer you can give them. Because you don't know what happens to them afterwards. I've had some incredibly horrible situations happen. When I worked at the hospital, there was one guy who literally hated my faith, hated the fact that I was a Christian. So I stayed away from him. You know, I treated him nicely, but he just made it very clear. So some years later, I was with a bunch of men, and he was there, and he was crying in his beer that his car had broken down and he was unemployed and he couldn't even go to job interviews. Now, I know a Finnish mechanic in Victoria who's very honest and decent. And I wrote down his name and phone number for him and I said, bring your car to this mechanic. I'll pay the bill. As I'm saying that, I said, I don't know what's wrong with his car. He might need a new engine. But I had already done it. Because that was my first go-to reaction. And honestly, I did it so that the other men didn't notice that, so there was no showcasing. and I just went to him very quietly. He ripped up the paper and he said, "Who the F do you think you are? You think you're going to win me to Christ because you offered to pay for my effing car?" I just went on a rant that everybody heard. And it's just going on. And I'm getting smaller and smaller. I walked home from there and I cried. I just, you know, I stopped to, you know, I said to the Lord, how's a grown-up man cry because somebody says bad things about him? But this is what it's happening. And I said, that's it. I'm never going back to hang out with those guys again. And God said, yes, but there were five men there. He may not be interested, but there's five others. Okay, I'll go back. And for some reason, that we had a regular Sunday evening meeting in this restaurant. That guy never showed up again. So I don't know what happened to him, but you know. But you see, like with our best intentions, I really honestly felt bad for him that he can't get a job because he doesn't have a car and he can't afford to fix it. So so we come to this wonderful Bible verse. I, Paul, have become all things to all men so that by all possible means I might save all. Is that correct?
No.
Thank you.
Some.
Thank you. So the logical progression would be all, right? I mean, if we followed where he's going with this, but it says some. So I, your name here, have become all things to all men so that by all possible means I might save some person in your life. This is a good prayer to have. That I will do my best to be the person who brings Jesus to this person, and I hope that they will get saved. Now let's look at the Canadian version of this Bible verse. I have become all things to all men so that by some means I might save a few. Not that I can actually save anyone, as long as I remain polite and don't offend anyone. So here is the finished version. I can probably not be anything to anyone, but through God some may be saved anyway. However, no Swede can be saved. And then we have Trump's version. I have become all things to all men, by all possible means I will save all, capital letters. And if some don't get saved, it's because of bad marketing, not working hard enough, and taking vacations like those Europeans. I've done this in the U.S., this, and some Americans actually say, what's the use to shoot for some? Like that, I've never thought of that Bible verse. That's ridiculous. If we're going to have a campaign to win people to Christ, and we just shoot for some, I'm not buying into that. I want everyone to come. I go, okay, thank you so much for enlightening me on that one. And it does sound logical, doesn't it? Well, let's just shoot for everybody and see what happens. All right. So how do you live a life that elicits questions? People kept coming to Jesus with questions all the time. Sometimes he answered with questions. Jesus' disciples were continually asking him for questions. And of course, his enemies tried to trap him with questions. This is not very much different than what you will face when you start your life of wanting to be a witness every day in everyday life. In one version of the Bible, it says, Jesus answered 51 times. That's a lot of answering. That means people came to him with questions. So as we looked at the reasons people, this is from the internet, so it must be true. Number one reason, they are hypocrites. Christianity is too exclusive. I'm a good person. I don't need God. If there's a God, why are there so many religions? And why does God allow bad things to happen? So these are the most common reasons that people reject God. So now your homework is come up with an answer that is yours, not mine, to answer all those questions. If you want to go do some practice, hang out with Zach when he's doing street ministry. He's dealing with these all the time. He probably has some really good answers. But ideally, the answer should come from you. That's your answer. Because I guarantee you, one or more of those questions are going to come up once you take a step to share your faith, including to all the men and women in the park. Somebody will have one or more of those questions. But, you know, when you know it's coming, it is your fault if you don't have a good answer. I'd hate to say it so bluntly.
But that's exactly how it is. And always remember, you only get one shot at it. And most of these are said not in a kind manner, which puts you at a feeling a little bit like, I have to defend myself here. Don't let your emotion get caught. Just answer them and give them the best answer you can come up with. I really believe that people want an honest answer from you. Okay, so we're going to take 3 minutes. So with your partner, the person beside you, or find a person, one of these two. I would like to briefly share my story with you, or pretend it's someone you've never met before. I mean, someone you have never told, you've known them for a while, and you say, I've never told you why I'm a follower of Jesus and the difference he makes in my life. I would like to tell you about it. Choose one of those two and tell the person, and married couples have to split up for this one. It's too easy otherwise. So just answer those 3 minutes each, and then we'll flip over, and then the other person gets a chance. So obviously the second person has the benefit of having more time to think about it. Oh, you guys are fine there. Yeah. So Zach, find somebody. Jarno?
Sounds good.
And if there's somebody who's alone. So one or two. And so, you know, and you become more flexible as you develop it. And please start doing this, you know, as sooner rather than later. Before you pray, Lord, send somebody that I can share my story with. Have at least something prepared. So obviously, take a quick prayer, quick breath. When somebody gives you that opportunity, Lord, help me now. It's a really sufficient prayer. I'm about to open my mouth, and if you don't start speaking through me, it's going to go bad really quick. So help me now. I'm stepping up for you. And then after the situation, no matter how it ends, Lord, thank you for the seed that I have been able to plant in this person. May they calm down enough that they can not hit a tree when they're driving. Whatever. I mean, if they really did get upset, you know, pray for them for safety, that they don't do something silly. Tell a story, an event from your life. Here we are looking at the principle of tolerable risk. We're back to the story, you know, the idea that you tell something amazing that happened in your life. I personally have the most powerful story, and it works better in Christian circles than in unchristian circles. It's when I was in a car accident and I died, and I went and met a whole bunch of my friends in heaven. And then Eria, what was her name? Eria, Futaria's sister from Toronto. Anybody remember them? Eria? Ripattila. She had passed away a little bit before, and first thing she told me, she says, please tell my mom that I am in a better place today than I have ever been. Tell her to stop crying. And the second thing she said, you're not coming here yet. Your time is not yet. So sharing that story of being in this other planet, wherever it was, is really effective for Christians and those people who are already considering Jesus. It does not work with people on first contact. And I always thought this would be the most amazing story ever. But a lot of people have near-death experiences, you know. So tell a story that is real easy for them to understand. Obviously, you need to have permission to share your story. And have Bible verses that speak to you, the ones that you think you want to share with them, and please memorize them so you're not pulling out your big fat Bible, which is really intimidating for most people when you pull out your Bible. And there's a thing called Easy. Unfortunately, I didn't have it with me, but I'll put it on the website today or tomorrow. So if you want to go check it, it's just a tiny little card that has 4 steps of leading someone to Christ. Why I believe in this is my cousin, Oti, was in a panic one time because her neighbor below her that she had wanted to share her faith with, and she actually went there to share her faith with him one time, and the living room window curtains were open, and he was levitating. He was 1 meter off the ground, sitting in a lotus position. And she just totally got so afraid of the spiritual aspects of that. He was literally levitating. And she says, I can never share my faith with that guy. And I'm like, yee, that is, I'm glad I haven't seen that. I don't know how I would react to that, but she said, I'm scared of him. He has a spirit in him. So what happens is sometime later, he's dying of cancer in hospital. And so she calls me and says, I have to go see him in hospital. What do I do? I'm so afraid. And I says, well, you know, I've just discovered this easy card. Here, take this card and just read this to him. Now, to me, even it sounded like, come on, is this as good as we can do, tiny little card? Because I'm really against mass-produced, printed testimonies. You know, just, I want it to be personal. And she took it as, oh, I can do this, because she was really, literally scared. So she goes by this guy's bed and basically reads the card. And the guy is dying of heart cancer, like he's got a matter of days to live. And the guy starts asking questions, and 15 minutes later gave his heart to the Lord. So then all of a sudden, I didn't mock this little card anymore, because I know at least one person, because maybe you're not ready to lead someone to the Lord. Maybe you've come in a car accident, and somebody's dying in your arms. This has happened to people I know. And all they're doing is comforting them, instead of spending those vital, because you don't know how long the person has to live. So to have something memorized that is as easy. So please check the website tomorrow. It'll be there, I guarantee it.
You're it's not just. Tell us what it is.
No, because I can't remember it. I don't personally use it because, you know, I know how to win a person, you know, say the sinner's prayer for, you know, in a situation like that. So it's something you can actually print out. And of course, the ultimate thing is to ask a person to make a commitment to follow Jesus. But notice how far up the line it is. Please remember, you do not skip any steps. The steps that you've made for yourself, don't skip any. Stick to it, because the fear becomes increasingly large that you will do something wrong if you get ahead of yourself. So that there's some checks and balances in your story. So we're God's dividing line. You and I are the dividing line. Not everyone, nearly everyone, is going to respond positively or favorably to your testimony. And it always feels like we have failed miserably when it happens. I would say it happens 9 times out of 10 that people do not go where I wanted them to go. But again, you have to remember, I'm just one piece of that chain. So we can live as genuinely and faithfully as possible and let others respond. You know the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. But we are to God the aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. To the one, we are the smell of death. To the other, the fragrance of life. And here is the bottom line to this. The important thing is that for those that reject Jesus, he must be the cause of the offense, not those who follow him. If a person rejects Jesus because of your behavior or because you offended them, you have failed. The offense must be Jesus, that you have presented Jesus in a way. I remember one guy that I lived with for 9 months sharing an apartment. At the end, he said, you know, you've been very good at telling me about Jesus, and I've considered everything you've said, and you've done a great job, but I have decided not to follow him. And I, like, 9 months of work. That's how the first thought is, you know, I've been trying so hard. And then his life went into an incredible tailspin. The good news is that I just met him 15 years later, and he is saved, his family is saved, his mom and dad are saved. So it became a good story, but many years later. So yeah. So here is, are you fishing or hunting? There's a great article that will be on the website for you. It's a 36-page article, so don't go into this lightly. It's written by Ruth Siemens, a lady who's gone to her Lord already. And I wish I had read this article way back when I started my journey of sharing my faith whenever I have a chance. Because the difference between fishing and hunting is, with fishing, you're dropping bait. With hunting, you shoot enough and something dies eventually. Right? Take a shotgun into a forest, enough bullets, you keep shooting, eventually you're going to kill something. But the problem is you do a lot of destructive work in the process. So fishing is simply leaving bait. And I've condensed her 36 pages to a few points. Live a life that draws people to ask questions from you. Make brief, fitting comments about God in everyday conversation. Find out a way that you can inject something about God. But number 3 is the more important one. change the subject because you're dropping bait. You're just raising their interest. I would watch her do this. We traveled in ministry with her for a while, and she was so brilliant at, when I was, go further. She would always change the subject. Oh, it's amazing that we're having such good weather. And I'm, really, you were on a roll. and people invariably, because you've left the bait, they take it and they take it further. So you answer briefly, change the subject again. Do you see how brilliant this is? To the average person? After the third or fourth question, I'm not an expert. Would you like to see what Jesus said? That was her way of bringing her Bible out of her purse. Now, in her favor, she was an 85-year-old woman, and nobody ever got mad at her. she was very cute as well. So, but do you see, the strategy is really important. Get people to awaken to a hunger so that you're not giving them all the answers. Make them work for it. So she is the tent maker who started Global Opportunities, today Global Intent. And through her ministry in South America, she started over 1,000 churches and trained the leaders in a 35-year era. And this is what she used. She taught all her pastors, everybody, fishing evangelism. So the takeaway here is, every time you step out and want to share your faith, it works. You don't see the results. You very seldom see the results. Just know it worked on some level, and you're still going to feel bad because you think you could have done better. How they respond is not the deciding factor. It's always a success when the gospel is shared with the lost. It's only a failure when we don't share the gospel with lost people. If we only throw a few seeds out a year, let's not expect a big crop. If we throw no seeds, expect no crop at all. Remember this one? For those who reject Jesus, he must be the cause of the offense, not those who follow him. So your story is the key. Figure out the answer to the questions. Be gentle and respectful. And some will get saved. The Bible tells us that. All right, so I was walking through Oslo Airport after a course one time, and I saw this ad. It's great to know all the right answers, but to know all the right questions is genius. And it's some kind of information company, essayist. Okay, so how to be missional without adding anything to your busy life? How often do you eat with non-believers? If you are going to shop somewhere, be a regular so that people get to know you. Don't go to three different stores if you can go to one, and the smaller the better in your community. Have a hobby with non-Christians. Talk to your coworkers. Don't ignore them. Volunteer for nonprofits. Participate in city events. Serve your neighbors. I know you guys have done a lot of these things here as a church, and I commend you for it. Be a regular. My greatest sermon of all time was in Swedish, in Smyrna Kyrkan, in Göteborg, Gothenburg, Sweden, a church of 1,600. It was my first and last sermon in Swedish. The pastor who has built a church from 300 to 1,600 is a dynamo. I wish we could get him as a guest speaker sometime over in Canada. He's amazing. He took me to pray with me before the sermon, and he said, "Are you nervous? Because you've never had a sermon in English, in Swedish." I goes, "No, I'm not nervous." He goes, "Oh, good, because I am." And then he proceeded to pray for me. And I basically shared that every person in this 600 church is responsible to take their faith with them. Basically this kind of seminar. And the pastor called me a few weeks later. He said, "I am really battling bitterness, because I have had more phone calls from people telling me how the sermon worked out in their life than any other sermon I have ever given. I have never seen such feedback." And then he shared the story of the oldest man in his congregation who lived alone, and every day, in Scandinavia and Finland, they go shopping for food every day. There's no such thing as buying 7 days, right? Am I correct? They always go with the little bag. And every day they go to the store, so we do the same thing. So he goes to the same store in his corner, and I had taught that
talk to the person behind the counter, call them by name, but make sure there's no lineup so that you can get 2-3 minutes of time and simply bless her or bless them. So he had gone to the store for his daily food, and he said how he stood back and waited for everybody to go, and you know, he's got his stuff there and he's just waiting for the lineup to clear so he can go. And he goes up to the girl and he, for the first time, realized, she has a name tag. What a concept. She had never seen it before. And he says, oh, hello, whatever the name was. And the girl said, oh, hello. He says, I just heard a sermon that I'm supposed to call people by name, so I just wanted you to feel that I want to bless you, or something like he said. He just mumbled stuff. And the girl said, church, which church do you go to? And he said, I go to Smyrnakyrkan. She goes, can I come? And he's like, where's the cameras? And she came to church and started attending like she had already been there twice, and sat beside the old man and he continues to disciple her every time he goes, stands there waiting for a clearance to talk to her for a few minutes. But that's all it took sometimes, is for somebody to make a stop instead of this busyness of life, stopping long enough to bless and to pay attention to them as a human being. I challenge you to do that. Call people by name and say something kind to them and see what happens. It always surprises me how well that is respected. Sometimes as a man, especially if it's a woman, you think, what if she takes this the wrong way, that I'm trying to hit on her or something? But I quickly throw, I'm a grandfather. I'm not trying to win anybody anymore. So yeah. So I have some books here that you can look at. But if you haven't downloaded this, this is the book that I wrote. I use this book often for myself. It started out as a book with 2 chapters that I hand-printed on a printer when we had old-fashioned printers, and I would give it as a flight attendant. I would give it to some people on my flight that I would get to know, and it was my own testimony. And then as I started winning more people to Christ, their stories were so amazing that I kept adding chapters. So this is the final product. You've read it. Anybody else read it yet? Oh, thank you. Wonderful. That's good to know. So for me, this is a testimony. This is the mega story. So just to tell you what happened, and it's also on my website, so please download it. So my daughter Maya and I are having coffee at Starbucks. I don't like Starbucks, but she does, so I go with her because I love her. And as you can see in the cup, one it says Maya and one says Ari. And her and I are having a nice evening in downtown Victoria. And out to the right, you can't see it, is a young lady with her Macintosh writing away like crazy. And my daughter is an author. She's getting her first book published, by the way, as we speak. And so I had just finished writing my book. It was already online. And I asked the lady, I says, what are you writing? Feeling very confident to talk to a woman when I'm with my own daughter. You know, this can't go terribly wrong here. You know, she says, oh, I'm writing my first book. And I said, really, what's it about? And she starts telling us, and then Maya says, well, I'm just writing my book. And then I says, and I just finished writing my book. And she's like, wow, that is so exciting. You know, and we have this great conversation about writing books. And then I said, do you want to read my book? She goes, I'd love to. So I write down the address on the end, and I give it to her. And as we're talking, I realize she's not paying attention to us anymore. She's reading the book. And she's, oh, this is awesome. Thank you for giving me this book. I'm going to read it now. But do you know, if I didn't have something to give her, it would have been a nice, how are you? And we would have gone our way. So I'm not telling you that you need to write a book, but to have something that takes that conversation to another level. And if you don't have a book, why don't you refer them to mine? It's very neutral. It doesn't, you know, you can't argue with people who've come to Christ from so many different cultures. So, and I suggest to you that you say, I know the guy who wrote this, because that gives a little bit more credibility to the book. And you never know, I'm thinking that in heaven I'm gonna see at least one person who says, hey, I'm here because I read your book, I found it in the garbage. You know? Right? Doesn't that happen? So, okay, so we're gonna take a little break and we're gonna do the last session. And we should be out on time. Pretty close to it, anyway. Take another 5 minutes.